calling me Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Larry.
Larry.
Larry.
Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Welcome to part three of Larry's Road Trip Redux. It's a loose chronicle of my recent 7,000-mile journey across the U.S. and back again. In these times, these strangest of times. As it happens now, Christmas Day is in mere hours, so I'll need to cover both. No way could I ignore the best day of the year, even though it is in the worst of years. This show is inextricably linked to Christmas. The very first episode back in 2016 was a holiday survival guide, which you can hear in its entirety at thatlarryshow.com. You'll find it in the December 2016 tab. I covered a lot of ground in that first episode, including the five worst Christmas songs ever recorded, but the heart of that episode was my musically assisted suicide of Charlie Brown. Here is that song. It got a lot of attention, positive and negative.
Christmas time is filled with pain. It never snows, it only rains. You never got those electric trains that Santa promised you. You're only eight and filled with hate, an outcast no one likes. Snoopy's dead, so let's move ahead. It's time to end your life. You wear the same Crayola shirt, each day is just the same. You're nearly bald and melon-shaped. You've never won a game. Here's a fistful of Nembutal. Just take them one by one. Soon you'll find you're somewhere else. It's less messy than a gun. No more Lucy, no more school, no more gloomy days. Put your head back and close your eyes and fade into the haze. Good night, Charlie. Goodbye now. Bye.
I was never a fan of the Charlie Brown cartoons for a bunch of reasons. They always seemed to have a certain gloom about them. Also, the characters were really a bunch of adults trapped in kid bodies. Kids who behave like authentic kids are much funnier than kids with grown-up neuroses and psychiatrists and so on. Still, it was an immensely popular franchise and remains so today. I've had a partial change of heart since that first episode, which includes an apology to Charlie's creator, the late Charles Schulz. This year there was a lot of controversy because it was the first time in many decades that the Charlie Brown Christmas special was not being televised. The backlash was so intense, CBS caved and eventually did air the show. And I was curious. And so I took another look. I still feel mostly the same about that cartoon, except for this part, which may be why people love it so much.
Isn't there anyone who knows what Christmas is all about?
Sure, Charlie Brown, I can tell you what Christmas is all about.
And there were in the same country shepherds, abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night, and lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them. The glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. and this shall be a sign unto you. You shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God, and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown.
That pretty much says it, doesn't it? Turns out that way back when the animated cartoon was made, the TV network did not want to include the speech about the real meaning of Christmas. And Schultz balked and told the network that the dialogue would stay in or his show was out. Schultz won. Good for him. Why do some people and institutions want to secularize Christmas? They get furious at nativity scenes in public spaces. Do people get angry at the sight of menorahs? If they do, why do they? Those big candelabras look kind of cool. As a kid in New York, nobody cared what kind of holiday decorations you hung on your house, or more often on the windows of your apartment. I recently saw an editorial written by some yutz who was all bent out of shape over the big Christmas tree in Rockefeller Center. He said it was time to do away with it. Anyone who has a Christmas tree is the focal point of the rage in his life. Yeah, that guy's got a life that's way too easy. Dude like that needs to experience some serious tragedy to reset his rage compass. I'll circle back to Christmas traditions in a little bit, but now let's slide into part three of that fabulous road trip. You know, by taking the trip, we broke a bunch of laws which themselves broke other laws. So whose laws took precedence? And while we're here, a quick word about government officials. In most other occupations, you kind of have to do something or study or take a test to earn whatever title you get. You need a license to be a doctor or a plumber or operate anything from a Vespa to a Kenworth. But if you want a job with great pay, Cadillac benefits, no experience necessary, head for the government. All you have to do is convince some people who are either catastrophically stupid or are not paying attention, convince them that you're the right one for the job, and presto, you're a city councilman or woman or warming seats in a House of Congress or maybe a governor's mansion. A lot of the time, you don't even have to convince anyone of anything. All you need is a pal that's already made it into the club. And make no mistake about it, all government is a club. And if you kiss the right club member's ass, he or she may appoint you to that job. No experience necessary, no effort necessary, no qualifications necessary. It's been going on forever. When JFK was elected, he needed an attorney general. So, he appointed his little brother, Bobby, even though Bobby had zero experience. The press, though they were in love with JFK, took some issue with his nepotism. JFK's answer was, quote, I can't see that it's wrong to give him a little legal experience before he goes out to practice law, unquote. Fast forward 60 years and nothing has changed. Well, we're getting a Secretary of Transportation whose qualifications are, well, that he likes trains, has ridden on trains, he once took a cruise, and he proposed to his husband at an airport. So he claims he understands the romance of travel. I proposed to my wife on an airplane. Never did I imagine that it would qualify me for a big government job. But then, I didn't know anyone in the club. So really, government is a club for mostly clueless clowns, few of whom have any real-world experience or achievements, yet we pay them handsomely to tell people who have actually built or achieved something What to do? Weird, huh? But back to the trip. On this trip, we, at times, meandered as we drove. And one of the places that grabbed us was a little town in the Texas panhandle called Vega. A tiny place. One, maybe two traffic lights. Vegas has, it's got a city hall, a one-room museum, a kick-ass little restaurant called the Hickory Inn and Cafe. Vega had a look we'd seen in a lot of small towns. It was clear there was not a lot of wealth, but there was a huge surplus of dignity, of pride in the town of Vega. Tiny houses painted and well-maintained. No litter, no graffiti, no security bars on windows or doors. People associate those high crime cues with big cities, but they're wrong. There are lots of small towns where you can get dead just by driving down the wrong street. And you know when you're there because they display all those earmarks of a society in decay. It's not about money or the lack thereof. So Vega, it's got that sleepy look of a small town, and we decided to have lunch at their Hickory Inn Cafe. Outside was a rusty old flatbed truck done up for Christmas with a full-size plastic steer and a longhorn calf wrapped in Christmas lights. Above that was a 40-foot-tall sign for the truckers with the word cafe set on diamond-shaped placards. But the Texas wind and sun had it in for vowels. Only the C and F remained. By the way, if you want to see images of all this stuff, go to thatlarryshow.com. Now, inside the cafe was simplicity. A few Formica top tables with napkin holders and ketchup bottles. A life-size cardboard cutout of John Wayne stood guard near the cash register. So they've yet to cancel the Duke. The place smelled great. Nobody wore a mask. The menu had maybe 10 items on it. It looked to be a husband and wife operation. Nice couple in their early 30s. Seemed they switched off duties in the kitchen and waiting tables. Now, usually in smaller towns, people tend to move a little slower, so you figure in some extra time for the food to arrive, but not so in the Hickory Inn and Cafe. And the food was spectacular. I had a club sandwich that was as good as I've had at Cantor's Deli in L.A. or the Stage in New York. But the mind blower was the burger my daughter had. Hands down, no contest, the tastiest burger ever. Maybe it was the Texas beef. When I paid the tab, the lady at the register asked where I was from. And I told her Los Angeles, but for not too much longer. She raised an eyebrow and I explained how the city has been ruined by politicians. She nodded and asked where I thought I might wind up, and I told her I wasn't quite sure, but there were a few contenders. She looked me straight in the eye and wished me luck. Her sincerity was unmistakable. It was not the usual perfunctory, hollow cash register chit-chat. She wished us a nice trip and a Merry Christmas. We headed for the main drag, which was deserted but picturesque. My wife and daughter got about a block ahead on me as I lagged behind to crawl around a 1930s vintage gas station that was remarkably well-preserved. Suddenly, my wife screamed my name, and I mean screamed. When I looked up, a pit bull was charging my daughter, who had already scooped moose into her arms. As I ran, I pulled my knife, thinking the worst was about to unfold, when suddenly, as if there was a hidden force field, the dog stopped about 10 feet from them and just paced back and forth, snarling. It was weird. A moment later, I heard a voice behind me and turned. It was an old man in a Stetson, Western shirt and cowboy boots. He held a shovel in his hands. He had to be into his 80s. He asked if we were all okay, and I asked him where he came from. He said he'd had his eye on that dog for a while, that it had been getting more and more aggressive, and he was driving by in his pickup when he saw the dog charge. He intended to brain it with that shovel. The dude was tiny, wiry, probably not more than 100 pounds. I was astonished. This would never have happened in L.A. or New York or vast portions of the country. If people stopped at all, it would be to record the scene on iPhones for social media. The best you could hope for would be them calling the cops, and who knows if they'd respond with a defunding. But this old Texan was ready to throw down for total strangers. That pit bull went 60, 70 pounds easy. Had he jumped that old man, he would have dropped him flat. Would that old cowboy have been fast enough with a shovel? We've talked a lot about the overuse of the word hero. Someone doing a job they're paid to do, even if that job is difficult or hazardous, does not a hero make. But that old cowboy was a hero. He had no idea that dog would stand down. He took a hell of a chance, but he didn't care. In last week's episode, I talked about a demographic that marketers have yet to identify and pigeonhole. I call them classic Americans. That old cowboy with a shovel fit the description perfectly. People with real courage, not manufactured moral outrage and a lapel ribbon for the social cause du jour. People who actually care about their fellow man and will get between them and a vicious dog. People who look you in the eye when they speak and actually say what they mean. People who just want to live their lives and have no interest in telling other people how to live theirs. Classic Americans are vanishing, but we were fortunate enough to meet some more on our road trip. You'll discover more of them in the next episode and learn why sinister groups want them eliminated. But really, classic Americans, though unique, are not original. They're a subset of a larger, ancient group called fine human beings. They come in every color, size, and shape from every corner of the world. And 2,000 years ago, perhaps the finest ever, was born in a stable on a cold desert night. He was kept warm by the bodies and breath of the farm animals that shared that stable. In his life, he set the example for how to be a fine human being. Incalculable words have been written about him and the life he lived. But it was a newspaper reporter named Jim Bishop who perhaps gave the most succinct and powerful summation of that life. This is what he wrote. He was born in an obscure village, a child of a peasant teen who knew not man. He grew up in another obscure village where he worked as a carpenter until he was 30. Then for 3 years he was an itinerant preacher. He never married or owned a home. He never held a job, yet paid taxes. He never set a foot inside a metropolis. He never traveled 200 miles from the place he was born. He never wrote a book or held an office. He did none of the things that usually accompany greatness. He received no awards, no medals, no prizes from his peers. While he was still a young man, the tide of popular opinion turned against him. His friends deserted him. He was turned over to his enemies and went through the mockery of a trial. He had no lawyers, no friendly juries, no fair hearing. He was nailed to a cross between two thieves. While he was dying, his executioners gambled for the only piece of property he had, his cloak. After he died, he was taken down and laid in a borrowed grave. Those who stood watch could not explain his disappearance, and yet 2,000 years have come and gone, and today he is still the central figure for much of the human race. All the armies that ever marched, and all the navies that ever sailed, and all the parliaments that ever sat, and all the kings that ever reigned, put together, have not affected the life of man upon this earth as powerfully as this one solitary life. God bless us, everyone. Thanks for hanging with me once again, and have a merry, merry Christmas.